All right, Wilder, speak for yourself from the crib. Happy Friday. Speak for yourself, presented to you by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Awesome show to end the week on. Aaron Rodgers, the Packers quarterback, is talking right now for the first time since the Green Bay Packers drafted Jordan Love in the first round. We'll get into that toward the end of the show, a reaction to what Aaron Rodgers had to say. All right, NASCAR is just around the corner this weekend. We live sports are coming back. NASCAR is coming back. Kurt Busch, Cup Series driver, he's going to join us in the second half of the show and talk about the return of NASCAR. But we're going to start with the National Football League, and we'll go out to LeVar Arrington's crib and have a discussion and get our reaction to Quentin Dunbar and DeAndre Baker. Quentin Dunbar just recently traded from the Redskins to the Seattle Seahawks for a fifth-round pick. DeAndre Baker, the 2019 first-round pick of the New York Giants. Police in Florida have issued warrants for their arrest. These two young men allegedly involved in an armed robbery during a card game, a high-stakes card game, card party, what have you. Guns were drawn, threats were made, jewelry and cash stolen, all allegedly. Allegedly, these two men had previously been taken for $70,000, $80,000 a couple of nights before. Allegedly, this was a revenge move by these guys. But take a listen to Quentin Dunbar, who on Thursday, that afternoon, was introduced by the Seattle Seahawks as one of their newest acquisitions. And the police are alleging later that day he participated in this armed robbery. But listen to what Dunbar said to the Seattle media on Thursday.
You just want to feel wanted at the end of the day. So, you know, them guys made a, made their job to trade for me. And that's good enough for me. And I just hope to repay them with, the way I carry myself as a person, as a player.
As he carries himself as a person and a player, he wants to bring respect to the Seahawks. All right, Marcellus, don't want to put you on the spot, but get us rolling here. What's your reaction to this news?
Man, you could go so many different directions with this situation. I just want to kind of talk to it on a grand scale when you're talking about the transition from wherever you're from and whatever you've been surrounded by, those codes, those principles, those values, that paradigm of that situation. And it's not always urban. It's not always the hood. Just whatever you're from, make sure in transition to a professional, football player, that you understand that in life, man, you got to lose some battles to win the war. It's just that simple. And I think that is one of the things that really helped navigate me through my path and my journey, even the transition to the pro level, being surrounded at times by figures that weren't good for me and my success and me being great. You got to learn that sometimes you got to take an L and pick your battles wisely. This is not a battle you should have chose. Even gambling inherently has an issue built into it. And we talked about that a week or so ago, about gambling just at its core is a problem, let alone to these stakes, let alone if you take a loss to try and go out there and have revenge on that same loss. So it just, for me, in short, is just learn to take a loss in a battle to win the war. And I think these guys right now, allegedly, whatever is going to be proven, would write a check, would rather pay away this problem than actually go out there and do what allegedly they did and enact what they did, which is just absurd. So just learn to lose a couple of battles to win the war.
I think it's a stiff shot of reality with no chaser. Think about the worst tasting shot you could take and chasing it with nothing. All right. We have this perception that being a pro athlete, becoming a pro athlete, cures a broken past. And quite frankly, it doesn't. It doesn't cure the past. And sometimes you see that this is not, as you mentioned, Marcellus, this is not a racially driven thing. This is a resources versus survival thing, right? Those who had the mentality of someone who has to survive is much different than those who have the resources to thrive. And so when we see these type of situations take place and that mentality of survival, which is a switch that is not easily turned on and off by becoming a pro or having success in life, there are going to be things that trigger off what you were built and what you were raised as. You created those habits and that identity of what you are. And I think that whether they're guilty or innocent in what took place, I can guarantee you the way that the situation was handled was based off of the identity that they created long before anybody cared about the type of player that they were.
Lavar, I think you make an interesting point. And it comes down to, I think, a lot of issues when you come from, and again, I don't know these guys' backgrounds, but I'm going to just speak in general. But respect. So many issues come down to don't disrespect me. If I've been disrespected, I have to take these actions to make sure that I'm respected on the streets, in my community, and things like that. And so I think Marcellus's point of you got to play a long game. And sometimes when you're in a war or you're on a life journey, you got to take a step back in order for you to take five steps forward. And if these charges prove to be true, these guys are about to take 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 steps back. And they may never be able to move forward because they played the game improperly and because they don't really understand their identity. And they haven't transitioned into a new identity in terms of, I'm a professional athlete. I represent an organization. I have great wealth. I can absorb this loss and recover from it and move on with my life. Now, tragically, it appears they've made a step that's really going to compromise them moving forward. And it's just sad. And there's a couple of things, and I'm sorry that I'm going there. People may not understand it, but I just want to be real. One of my initial reactions when I read this story yesterday was like, man, we were so outraged about some kid and a tattoo on his arm, and he's a kicker, and we don't know anything about him, and we're convicting him over thoughts that we disagree with. And the crime of thought has been legalized in America. You can think whatever the hell you want, but the crime of actions, and again, we don't know if these guys are guilty or not. They'll have their day of court. But I just say, save the outrage for crimes of action. Crimes of thought, we're going to have to let go. Because, again, we've seen athletes and other individuals do really silly, stupid, criminal things. Let's save the outrage for that. And, again, if we're going to live in a free society, people are allowed to think really dumb things. They really are. And we have to be tolerant of that. And so I when I first saw this, my thoughts were like, wow, this is outrageous. And we shouldn't be wasting outrage on things that are silly and inconsequential. That was one of my first reactions to this.
Yeah, it's interesting you said outrageous and the outrage that comes from different types of crimes and different parts of our country. It's funny because I think we need to even save the outrage even for the outrageous, because this situation, this story about Baker and Dunbar feels oh so familiar in terms of people who struggle with that transition. And that transition that LeVar was talking about, it's a real thing. It's a glamorization of a certain mindset, a paradigm. You want to call it a ghetto mindset, which doesn't have racial borders. You can call it that. But a lot of guys get into that situation and it's so difficult for them to move on, to move forward, to have upward mobility. A lot of them want to subscribe to, I'm going to stay down. And when you stay down, that is a code. That is a subscription to principles and to a way of life where people who have the least want to go out there and do the most. And you're walking around, and I lived it. I walked around where people were always on that edge, on that trigger for nothing. I mean, like, in the scope of things, it's really nothing, especially if you have tapped into your inner power. These guys, their inner power and passion to become professional football players. And now you, at a moment's notice, will give all of that up. Think of how many push-ups, sit-ups, 40-yard sprints, workouts you had to put in to get into this place. And now you can wash all of that away because of a lack of respect given to you. The greatest respect you can get is through your own success and belief in that. So it's a really sad story, but I wasn't outraged because I've seen it before. I've had teammates locked up for 10 plus years who subscribed to the same mentality and didn't want to switch over to a professional mindset.
You know, what's interesting is bringing up even the kicker with his tattoos and what you just said, Marcellus. I look at it like this. The mentality that we want these guys to turn off and on as they gain success is really seamless to the life that they lead and they live while building their identities growing up. So when we talk about doing those push-ups and doing that running and doing those things, what are we generally doing it for? Usually two things. One, so I could be able to defend myself. Two, so I could try to make it up out of here. If I could be a good enough athlete, I can make it up out of this situation. And believe you me, when I say this, do not think that this is racially connected, because I have mentored a ton of young people and there is no color connected to survival. So if that guy had those tattoos, whether it was action or whether it was thought, it doesn't matter. It came from an origin of where you are saying, for my identity and where I come from and growing up, this is my survival technique. And he might not even been poor or in poverty. But with that being said, there was a safety that was connected to him having those tattoos on his arm. The mentality that played out with those guys, whether it was whether they're guilty or not, again, it is something that was built seamlessly with them being on the field. Because the interesting paradigm here is we enjoy seeing that mentality play out when they make the plays on the football field, but we condemn it when it carries over to the aspects of their lives that we're exposed to when they get in trouble. So for me, I look at it as, this is merely a pure shot of reality. Stop thinking that athletes are something, this mythical figure that is beyond reproach, and understand that they come from backgrounds that can be easily connected to those of maybe the place that these two may end up going to.
Thank you, LeVar. All right, stick around.
Thank you, bro.
We're going to keep it moving. No. We're going to talk to Frank Thomas. We're going to go out to his crib and talk to Major League Baseball and how they're going to hopefully come to an agreement between the union and the owners so we can see some Major League Baseball. Frank Thomas from his crib. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Happy Friday. Speak for Yourself, presented to you by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's roll out to Frank Thomas's crib and talk some Major League Baseball. Frank, a perfect guest for this show. Frank made more than $100 million while playing in Major League Baseball. And now we have this major dispute between the owners suggesting a 50-50 split of revenue if they play an 82-game schedule with no fans. All right, yesterday we heard from Blake Snell saying, no way in hell he's accepting that. He wants all of his money. Well, now he's being backed by a couple of the biggest stars in all of professional baseball. Nolan Arenado has spoken out. He signed a $260 million contract. He's backing up Blake Bell. And Bryce Harper, who signed a $330 million contract, is backing up Blake Snell as well. Bryce Harper saying he ain't lying. He's right. He's speaking the truth, bro. I ain't mad at him. Somebody's got to say it. At least he manned up and said it. Good for him. I love Snell. The guy's a beast. One of the best lefties in the game. All right, Frank. Are MLB players making a mistake being this vocal right now on this financial agreement between them and the owners?
I'm not going to say it's an all-out mistake. I'm just going to say this is a delicate time right now to be discussing money in the public when you got billionaires and millionaires fighting over who's going to, you know, get the biggest pie of all of this. I think at this particular time, take pride in being the first major sport back on TV, because I think there's a huge upside for the owners to get that TV revenue nationally and locally, because people are just right out tired right now, being at home with no pro sports on national TV. So as for the players, I look back to 94. I think we were a little too vocal about the strike, and it definitely hurt us because it took baseball a few years to come back after that. They just need to be a little more careful with their words, because you guys know and I know in the media, we're looking for the biggest gun to make the biggest mistakes so we can plaster over all the news. And that's what's happening right now with the top players.
I will agree with you here. It's not the most tasteful conversation we could be having right now in this pandemic. But because they're going to be the first major sport back, it looks like, then you got to be the windshield, as they say. That means you got to take all the bugs, all the hits. Everything's going to hit you first. And that's why we're having it. But that said, we want baseball back. We need baseball back. However, a good faith negotiation is necessary to facilitate that. And that's not what the owners are giving the players. I remind everyone, they negotiated prorated salaries during this pandemic. But now we're going to double the negotiation and negotiate on the negotiation because of a lack of foresight or covering themselves as ownership group. Whatever you want to think, whatever side you want to go on, I'm with the players, not because I'm a former player, because they actually have merit in what they're saying. You want a 50-50 split of revenue? Fine. Please tell us what the revenue is in totality. Once baseball comes with that answer, then they can talk about a 50-50 split. Until then, they're asking the players to take more risks for less money and go out there, set a new norm, basically a new salary cap in baseball that has never occurred, and then ask the players to go out there and say everything is status quo. Sorry, can't go for that ownership.
I do want to clarify one thing. NASCAR's back this weekend on Fox. Major League Baseball has a chance to be the first major team sport league to come back, okay, which I think could be really important for Major League Baseball. And this is why I agree with you, Frank. They really need to be delicate here, because there is a great opportunity for Major League Baseball in terms of being a leader in this country and elevating its relevancy back a little bit. Baseball probably never get back to where it's dominant over football, but there is an opportunity here to tap into some Americana and some collective spirit here in America, make everybody feel good. Baseball is being a leader in showing us how to respond to this pandemic in a fearless, appropriate, fearless way. And I go back to 1994 as well, because that was the first year that I worked as a full-time columnist in a major baseball city in Kansas City. And I remember that did not go well for the players and the reputation of the players, and kind of hurt Major League Baseball, because the players were framed as incredibly greedy. And to me, I would say to Blake Snell, Bryce Harper, Nolan Arenado, follow the lead of Major League Baseball owners. Have you heard an owner be outspoken on the other side of this? Or have they sat back and let Rob Manfred take all the heat? And maybe the players should perhaps hide behind their union leaders. Your position's known. We know how Major League Baseball players get down. They're a beast about their money and supporting their union. I would play the back here a little bit, Frank, and let others be a little bit more outspoken if I were an MLB player.
You're right, Jason. And to get back what Mr. Wiley said, you're right. I would prefer they stay status quo, you know, because they signed the contract before the season. The money was in the bank. You're going to end up having to pay for the 82-game schedule. I really believe the salary structure should stay where it's at, and let's finish the season and get the fans what they're looking for right now, and that's that hunger for a live major sport on national TV. Someone's going to win, someone's going to lose, but the bottom line is, with this pandemic, we need a major sport back on national TV. So as for the players, I feel you, especially when you talk about health, because this is about health first. But as for playing and then the money situation, let's keep that behind closed doors. Let's find a way, a solution quickly, And let's get back, if we got a chance of being back on the field, July 1st.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the health concern, because I think a lot of that's getting lost because we're talking about money. And that's the balancing act our country is dealing with state by state, city by city right now, is how to manage those two entities. But look at this. I'm asthmatic. A lot of people don't know that. I couldn't play sports when I was growing up until I got doctor's clearance because I am asthmatic. Imagine how many guys have underlying conditions that are in Major League Baseball, and they're being asked now to take on a greater risk. That's a conversation separate to this, but also in connection to this. Let's talk about the fact that I understand that the narrative and convo matters, but the dough matters as well. This is called professional sports for a reason. You are paying for services. So these players, I really think the only reason they put their names to it and their cachet to it is because it may not have been heard unless they did that. And kudos to Snell and Bryce Harper and others who will come, and the dominoes will continue to fall in making this a real conversation, instead of everyone at home is going to look at the players and say, why are you complaining? That's greed. But the billionaires are going to be absolved of that same conversation because they're going to hide and stay anonymous. Unfair. So this situation, the rubber has to meet the road if they're going to continue and play. We got to have this real conversation, unfortunately, for the public display.
One thing I want both of you all to respond to quickly, and then we got to go. I just would advise Blake Snell, Bryce Harper, everyone, make sure you're actually looking at the data and the real issue as it relates to Corona, and not just the mainstream media and what's being forced down your throat. Be afraid. Corona's killing everybody. I think where they're going to run into an issue is they're going to start to be hardcore sports fans. And some guys like, hey, man, this health risk you guys are talking about is way over exaggerated. The recovery rate for Corona is really, really high. As we test more people, find out how many more people have actually had it and have recovered or asymptomatic, I think fully leaning into, oh, my God, we're risking our lives, I think is going to fall on deaf ears and may actually backlash against them, because I'm not sure the health risk is as pronounced as it's being portrayed in the media. You guys can respond to that quickly. Marcellus, you go first, then Frank, I'll let you have a final word, and then we got to go.
Yeah, I mean, people just got introduced to my new co-host, Dr. Jason Fauci, again. He does this every now and then. And, hey, look, I respect it. I respect where Jason's coming from. However, I will disagree in terms of, it's something that Mark Schlereff always says. It's like, there's no such thing as minor surgery unless it's on someone else. In this situation, it may be exaggerated. It may not affect you, but it will affect someone. And if it is on you, if it's someone in your family, you look at this completely different. I understand where you're coming from, Jason. Trust me. But if there's only a mortality rate of 5 to 1%, but you fall into that 1 to 5%, we have a different conversation than the 95 to 99%ers are having. So that's the only thing I would say to that.
Well, you're right. And both of those guys got something to lose, the owners and the players. If someone comes down, maybe our whole team can get affected. So the owners got to worry about that on the onset. And also the players got to worry about getting sick. So, but I just would pull back off the table and stop talking about this money situation, because I think there's enough to gain for both sides. Let's keep the money out of the news. Let's hope we can keep everybody healthy and start on July 1st with this first major sport. I know you said NASCAR, Whitlock, but I'm looking at NASCAR in the top six, because I think golf is 5, NASCAR is 6, and I look at hockey as 4. So,
hey, Frank, let me tell you who's watching.
Sports going again.
A guy named Eric Shanks, and he paid a lot of money for NASCAR to be on this network.
Yes.
And we can't wait to have Kurt Busch on. Let's go racing. We got to let you go, Frank. Eric Dickens is around
Thanks,
the corner.
God,
thanks, sir.
We're going to talk some more NFL. Thank you for coming on. I love NASCAR. So does Eric Dickens, and he's from his crib. Speak for yourself. Presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, time now to talk some NFL and roll out to Eric Dickerson's crib. We'll hear from ED about James Harrison saying during a podcast interview that in 2010, after the NFL fined him several thousand dollars for a big hit, Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin hit him with an envelope. James didn't say what was in the envelope, but you can surmise what you want. James says, and I talked to James yesterday, he didn't deny it to me yesterday, but he has since denied that Mike Tomlin has given him any cash. Art Rooney has also denied that Mike Tomlin gave him any, that Mike Tomlin gave Harrison any cash. But Sean Payton, the coach suspended during Bountygate, he had some interesting comments. He's not expecting the NFL to investigate the situation too hard. Take a listen.
If people are waiting for the league to investigate that, they shouldn't hold their breath. I would be shocked. That'll be something that's tucked away or under the rug at Park Avenue. They'll look into it briefly. Don't get me started on that.
Get you back in the doghouse, Coach.
In salary. You know, honestly, something I'll never truly get over because I know how it was handled and how it was run and the reasons behind it. And that's just the truth.
All right, ED. Does Sean Payton have a right to be angry?
Well, yes and no. I mean, he lost $6 million. And I think they went a little overboard with it. But look, Marcellus, you know this as well as I do. You know, bounties have been around for a long time. I mean, when I played, I won't forget, we played the Washington Redskins in the playoff. My cousin, Dexter Manley, went out to dinner that night. He said, Eric, I want to tell you, man, be careful. They have a bounty on you. I said, okay. I said, how much the bounty? He said, $1,000. I'm like, all right. I mean, I didn't worry about it. You know, if you knock me out, hit me, you know, a good clean hit, hey, that's football. Football is a physical sport. The same thing the Bears had a bounty on me. You know, Richard Dent told me. So, you know, that's how football is. But when you go to try to hurt a guy, say, hold him up, take his knees out, I have a real problem with that part of it. But this Sean Payton, I mean, like, this is hearsay. And if Mike Tomlin did give him a little envelope, he probably say, look, man, I'm just going to help you out because I know you're probably going to get fined. So he that kind of, I'm just going to help you out, you know, because I'm sure he didn't get him $75,000 in an envelope. But does he have a gripe? Yes and no. I mean, when you put bounties on people and they were guilty of it, you know, you have to pay the consequences sometimes. You can't. You go out there with your hand, and the pie of your hand, you have to eat the cookie, but you got caught.
Look, should he be mad? Yes, and hell yes, he should be mad. But not specifically because of this, reintroducing this to the public, but just in general. Like you said, Eric, bounty's been around since the game started, man. I walked into the league as a rookie and collected a lot of money because of bounties. I didn't start bounties, but I guess what? I took advantage of a situation where guys say, hey, Wally, knock him out, 500, 250 if he gets up slow. I just thought, hey, you know why this is not a bad thing? Because I'm already trying to knock him out. Every time I'm on that football field, everybody trying to get it. And when you put money on it, you have not further incentivized me. I'm already trying to do this dude wrong. So it's funny, like how they say, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Or also a man who lost some of his bread. You play with a man's bread, you got an issue, man. And $6 million for something that was happening league-wide. And then when it all fell on Sean Payton, he's looking around like, I'm not going to snitch and out any of y'all, but I hope they don't put this all on me because they know it's league-wide. And then they made it all land on the Saints and Sean Payton, man. Hell yeah, he got a problem. And hell yeah, he's justified in having that problem.
Yeah, I think he should have a problem. Again, when they take $6 million from you, you're going to have a problem. And for the reasons Marcellus says, it was part of the culture in football. I think Sean Payton probably is willing to accept somebody had to be the example and the scapegoat so they could set a new standard in the NFL. But what he said, did you have to take $6 million from me? Couldn't you have taken $2 million from me? Suspend, you know, we're going to take a percentage of your salary, but the entire thing. So I get why Sean Payton's upset. It's like, okay, I'm going to be the example. But to the tune of $6 million, I get it. But he's got to move on. James Harrison, we talked last night. I can't, this kind of dry snitching James just did. Not a good look. He done got Mike Tomlin probably in some hot water, but hopefully Sean Payton's right and the investigation won't go anywhere. ED, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you guys. Good seeing you.
All right, we're going to keep it rolling.
Thanks, brother.
Good seeing you. We're going to keep it rolling and talk some NASCAR with Kurt Busch from his crib. Speak for yourself from the crib. Presented by Hyundai. More after this. In just 2 days, it's the day we've all been waiting for as NASCAR returns. Don't miss the historic green flag and the return of live racing as NASCAR is back Sunday at 3:30 Eastern on Fox. And remember to record your personal Darlington race day experience and upload your video to hashtag 100KCams. Then tune into FS1 on Sunday, May 24th at 3 p.m. Eastern to see the show and see if you made the cut.
My dog.
Welcome back. Time for us to pull up at Kurt Busch's crib and talk some NASCAR. Kurt, thank you so much for doing this. The number one driver, the Monster Energy Cup driver. Kurt, you've been gone for 2 months. Racing's been gone for 2 months. What have you been doing to stay sane and race ready during this time off?
You know, of all things, I got roped into a Peloton group with a bunch of buddies from all over the country. Everybody's in different time zones, and people will say, hey, let's roll at 6 a.m. Hey, let's roll at 1 p.m. And so these guys are beasts, though. I'm only 160 pounds. Some of these guys are up 250, and they're pedaling hard. So I've been having my ego crushed on that as well as iRacing. So it's time to get back to the track.
Listen, you guys are basically in 2 days welcoming America and American sports fans back to a sense of normalcy. We're creeping towards normalcy. This is going to be a big deal. This is going to be a big deal for America and for NASCAR. Are you feeling added pressure because you guys are really the first major sport? And I know UFC's been back, but the first major, major sport to come back. You feeling added pressure to put on a show?
I'm feeling the excitement, the anxiety, but also I'm very proud of the fraternity of drivers and the collaborative effort from the team owners, the sponsors, our broadcast partners. I know Fox was really instrumental in making this happen because we're adjusting some of our normal schedule and some of the tracks that we should have been at due to state restrictions and local counties. And so everybody's doing a great job of following the protocols, putting things in place to be as safe as possible. And I was at the race shop yesterday to cruise on by. We have 250 employees at Chip Ganassi Racing. I counted 9 guys in the shop, and we're going racing in 2 days. So everybody's working as hard and as smart as they can right now.
Now, Kurt, no practice, no qualifying, no fans in the grandstands. A random draw gives Brad Keselowski the pole. What adjustments are you making to this unusual setup for this weekend at Darlington?
Yeah, that's the oddities of everything right now. The biggest disappointment is no fan. We won't have our fans who are so loyal to our sport and so passionate for their specific driver or manufacturer. That's going to be the toughest part. But I know they'll be there in spirit through the television broadcast. You know, the race day feel will be different because of the lack of people at track. But when they drop the green flag, we've got to focus. We've got 400 miles to win at Darlington, one of the toughest track. Scale of 1 to 10, this is a 9.5. With the racetrack, lack of the normal pit crew and support system, as well as the overall environment. And, of course, what we're all doing with our protective equipment, our PPE, the pre-screening, the in the lines in our own vehicles. There's such a process to this that we just need to get Sunday done and get rolling.
Now, interesting stretch coming up, 4 cup races in 11 days, first time since 1971. How do you prepare for such a heavy workload?
The mental side of it is key. I love Darlington and racing there. Love Charlotte. I've won at Bristol 6 times. So these are a bunch of good tracks for me. But physically, with the training, of course, with running on the treadmill, the elliptical, the Peloton bike with a bunch of my buddies. I live on a lake here in North Carolina, so I've been out there kayaking. And so you got to get your elevated heart rate going, but nothing simulates the G-forces that we go through and the heat in the car. So that's why I'm wearing my sweatshirt in the house, just trying to get acclimated and get warm. And the next couple of days, it's going to be 125 degrees in that car.
Ooh. Kurt, you've never won at Darlington. Fox Bet has your brother Kyle as one of the favorites. Fox Bet has your brother Kyle as one of the favorites. You don't know me well, Kurt, but people keep asking me, Jason, you're losing all this weight during the coronavirus. And I keep telling them it's because I can't. I'm going through gambling withdrawals. I'm a degenerate gambler. I need someone to bet on this weekend. Tell me why I should bet on Kurt Busch at Darlington.
Yeah, so I think my little brother is going to have odds around 8-1. Mine are, I don't know, 25-1. That's a steal, man. We should have won that race last time we were there in September. So if you've got 20 bucks, I'm going to say you're going to use it pretty well. And that way you don't spend it at the ice cream truck when it comes by.
What if I have 2,000 bucks I'm looking to bet?
A lot of ice
you
cream.
Do you, all right?
Now I'm looking to bet, Kurt.
All right.
Hey, well, good luck this weekend. Good luck on Sunday.
All right. Thank you. Perfect. I appreciate
all right,
that.
Thank you, guys. Great luck. Good luck on Sunday. We look forward to it. All right, that's Kurt Busch, the Monster Energy number one car. Look for him this Sunday at Darlington. All right, stick around. LeVar Arrington's going to come back. We're going to talk about Aaron Rodgers' press conference today where he sounded off about Jordan Love. It sounds like he took the high road. We'll tell you if we're buying it. Speak for Yourself presented by Hyundai. More after this. Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. Happy Friday. Right, we're going to be rejoined by LeVar Arrington from his crib and have some reaction to Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers, his first public comments since the Packers went up in the draft and got the quarterback out of Utah State, Jordan Love. Rodgers said he was not too thrilled with the pick, or he said it would be a mistake to say he was thrilled with the pick. But take a listen to his response when asked if he thought this would impact whether he finished his career with the Packers.
I know we've all heard you say you wanted to finish your career as a Packer even beyond your current contract. Do you think this pick affects that in any way, and is that still your plan to do that?
I think it's definitely telling at this point that is truly something that's out of my control. What I can't control is how I play and making that decision. If I were to retire on the organization's timetable, then it's an easy decision, but if there comes a time where I still feel like I can play at a high level and my body feels great, you know, then there's, you know, other guys have gone on and played elsewhere.
All right, Marcellus, based on Rodgers' comments today, do you think he finished his career as a Green Bay Packer?
Absolutely not. No, not a chance. This is a guy who's now being a living legend as he is, one of the greatest quarterbacks we've ever seen, been forced to focus not on the team concept as much, but the first law of nature, self-preservation. They have backed him into a place where mentally he has to approach it where he has to protect himself, protect his body, protect his career, and protect his future. So I don't think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be shelf-lived based on what Green Bay thinks. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to play until he's finished playing, and I think that's going to be a lot longer than the Green Bay situation. He's going to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that's kind of spot on if you ask me. It's a very responsible response for Aaron Rodgers to say what he said, for one. But secondly, he's been compromised by this pick. No matter what anybody says, it's a compromising. And then you got to look at it. They put everybody on notice. Green Bay has put everyone on notice that Aaron Rodgers' time is coming to a near end. So when you listen to what he says, no, I don't feel that he's going to end up there. I think he'll continue to play at a high level. So now the words that he says are truly words that will dictate if his next employer views him highly or not. So taking the high road, saying that he controls how he plays, I think is the right way to approach it. And yes, his days are numbered in Green Bay.
You know, I would love to disagree with you guys, but I think they've gone too far in terms of, let's say Jordan Love's not any good. I don't think, and Aaron Rodgers continues to play at a high level. I think the problem for Green Bay is that because they made this move, Aaron Rodgers is going to want to get out of Green Bay, short of Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst, them getting fired and a new regime coming in. And so it almost doesn't matter. Aaron Rodgers, if he continues to play well, his demand is going to be high all the way up into age 40 or whatever. I think he moves on from Green Bay. But the problem for Green Bay is they better damn sure be right about Jordan Love. And this is a kid that played at Utah State. I think there are some reasons why he had a bad senior year or a bad last season at Utah State that really don't have to do anything with him. It just, they only had two starters back, different, I think, offensive coordinator. And so I just think there's a lot of pressure on Green Bay for Jordan Love to be good, because I do believe Aaron Rodgers mentally is looking for his way to get out of Green Bay.
Yeah, and that won't happen anytime soon because of the contract. He's going to be there for two more years. I don't think more, but certainly not less, just because of the dead cap hit right now at a $51 million dead cap. That's insane. So Aaron Rodgers has two more years to land this plane properly and then take off somewhere else. But that's how it's going to play out. But he got caught in the situation, almost a perfect storm. You get a coach who is certainly more favorable towards the run than pass in Matt LaFleur. He likes to run the football. Then you can look at Aaron Rodgers, and you saw a lesser than great Aaron Rodgers last year. You won 13 games with a lesser version of Aaron Rodgers. You're starting to say, hey, Aaron Rodgers and his floor could be Jordan Love's ceiling, and that's a 13-win team. So because of contract, because of the perfect marriage of a philosophy, and you may have a quarterback who probably won't be Aaron Rodgers, but good enough to get you some wins, they're going to depart. They're going to move on.
You know, it's interesting with that you said Jordan Love better be the guy replacing Aaron Rodgers. I look at it like this. Their focus is purely on Jordan Love. So Aaron Rodgers is basically a mercenary at this point. He's a man without a nation, because the focus while he is there is going to be making sure that Jordan Love is as smoothly transitioned into being the face of this Green Bay franchise as possible. So within the time frame of what Marcellus is talking about with his contract, they're going to get those weapons that Aaron Rodgers was hoping to get with the Jordan Love pick. They're going to get those weapons in free agency and in the draft. They are looking to protect Jordan Love, develop Jordan Love, and then transition him in and Aaron Rodgers out at the proper time.
And but again, that begs the question. You can provide him all these pieces, but you just don't know Jordan Love until you have Jordan Love. And that's not about his arm strength, his 40 time, his ability to throw the deep ball. It's just like, what type of person is he in terms of preparation and being the face of the franchise and being a professional quarterback? They better be right that this kid is buttoned up, ready to go, because it is hard. There's a lot of pressure on these quarterbacks. A lot of attention, a lot of money, a lot of fame. You just don't know how people react once they get the money. And so they better be right, not just about him physically, but between the ears they have to be right about Jordan Love. Is he a Lamar Jackson who's all in on the game, or is he a kid that's not all in on the game? We'll have to wait and see. That's the risk they took.
They still got to try, though.
All right.
Because they took him with that pick. Still got to try.
Yep. Too high.
Oh, they're definitely going to try.
They got to try.
I just hope that for their sake, I just hope they're right. Colvin, you need to tell me how much time we got, because I hear the music. Well, I think we're done.
Hey, Mike.